Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 2 is over, but we're just getting started here on the Walking Dead Live post-show recap. And now, here are the two guys who are always ready, always watching. I'm Rob Cisternino. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well, always doing well, the well, if you prefer, because the name of this episode was The Well.
Yes.
That's how I'm doing. I'm doing very the well. How are you, Rob?
Very the well as well. Yeah. And yes, got my pomegranates, got my nectarines. I am ready to go, Josh Wigler.
Who do you think likes pomegranates more, King Ezekiel or the Phoenix named Needle from Conan the Barbarian, the animated TV series from the 1990s?
Toss up.
Do you want to take a crack at that, or do you want to just let that hang out there in the air?
Let's let the commenters weigh in on that. We'll do
any Needle fans, raise your hands. Probably two. Let's go with that.
Be a poll question, like when I did the Walking Dead story sync tonight.
Yes. Oh, I like that. How was that? How was the Walking Dead behind the scenes material tonight? Yeah,
so good.
Had to have been pretty plentiful with the Kingdom, which is one of like the big, vibrant comic book areas to bring to life this season. So I got to imagine there was a lot of like Charlie Adlar illustrations on the screen share.
Nope, they didn't really get into that.
Really?
No.
Oh, disappointing. No. I'm not happy about that.
Let's deal with the fun stuff. So. Anyway, Josh, The Walking Dead has two speeds, and the exact opposite of last week's episode, but fun stuff to talk about here with you guys live, hashtag PS recaps as we get into our episode number two, but definitely a different tone tonight than we had in our season premiere.
Yeah, remarkably lighter, right? I mean, just like the night and day in terms of the tone. This was a very hopeful episode, surprisingly, coming out of the very bleak premiere, whether you liked it or didn't like it. It's a bleak premiere. Two fan favorite characters getting their heads bashed in after 6 months away. That's going to be pretty miserable to sit through. This was ultimately pretty hopeful, pretty optimistic. I mean, Carol moves out. She gets to be alone, but she's not so far away. She's not so far away that she can't get what are the fruit baskets that get delivered? Edible arrangements. Yeah, she's getting some pomegranates and stuff. It's a hand delivery from Ezekiel, so things are okay for Carol. This is all right.
Yeah, we've seen this happen a few times before in The Walking Dead, where we meet a new civilization, whether it's what was going on with Alexandria or even Terminus. And a lot of times these things are not as they seem with the colony.
Never forget Woodbury. Rob. Never forget.
Sure.
Yes. OG. Yes.
But this one seems pretty good.
Seems all right. I mean, the dude in charge like needs to chill out with the medieval talk, probably. Calm that down a little bit, and you know, don't talk with like your King Arthur voice that you're trying to put on, and maybe just like keep it real the way that you're talking to Carol at the end of the episode. And if we do that, we're probably even better. But aside from that, they've got a small choir, Rob. They've got a small choir singing Bob Dylan on request. They've got chocolate bars just hanging out. They've got cobbler at every single meal. The Kingdom, if we were to do the power rankings of like the great places to live in The Walking Dead, this has to shoot up pretty there. High on the top of the list. I mean, yes, they're under the oppression of the saviors, but even then, it seems like they're handling themselves okay.
Yeah, it seems like this is definitely the move. Just give the saviors what they want and everything will be fine.
Yeah, feed them pigs that have been eating dead people and, you know, you're going to be okay here. That's going to be the move. So maybe Rick could take a note or two from the Kingdom.
So a lot of things to unpack here tonight. You brought up the pig thing.
Yeah.
Can we discuss that? I mean, that season 5, I believe, gave us the tainted meat storyline. I mean, is that poisonous for the saviors to eat the pigs that have been eating the dead? Or did we establish at that point in time that if you cook the pigs, then there is no virus?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we never really got the resolution of what happened to the people who were eating Bob, because the people who were eating Bob subsequently got machetes buried in their faces. So we never got to see that far along the process of what happens when you eat tainted meat. It feels like it would probably be a slow build, or at least it'd be a very strong move on Ezekiel's part to feed these saviors tainted pig, assuming that immediately they are going to turn into walkers, and then also assuming that the fingers aren't going to get pointed back to them. So I don't know. I'm not sure what the game plan is there. other than maybe like the pigs are going to taste really, really gross because that's what they've been subsisting on.
Because correct me
flesh.
If I'm wrong, Josh, and let me know if I have my Walking Dead history correct.
I'll fact check you.
Back in season four, okay, at the prison.
Yes.
Didn't we have a thing where the livestock that was being raised there was eating something that was of the dead and we had to slaughter all of the livestock that we had at the prison?
I remember the reason why they were slaughtering the livestock was because some walkers, there was a walker breakout in the prison in the early going of season four. And Rick, who was now a farmer, was very tragically having to kill his pigs in order to lure the walkers away. That's all I remember about what the pigs were involved in. It was very traumatic. It was very terrible. And I don't recall what they were eating, but that's a good thing to go back and study the tape on.
Okay, we'll check that out. All right, probably yeah, we'll not the most burning, pressing issue from tonight. But again, a little bit of a slower night on The Walking Dead than we had last week. Not as many headlines.
What do you think? Do you think that they've got pork cobbler in there? Do you think that's a thing that's happening? I mean, they've got so many different types of cobbler. You got to imagine they're doing some savory cobblers in there. Maybe the
savory
cobbler
cobblers.
Is happening. Savory cobblers, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Josh, I guess let's start with King Ezekiel in terms of the kingdom. I know that you are a comic book reader. You have been exposed to King Ezekiel before. What did you think of the first appearance of King Zeke tonight?
Well, more than that, like I have been very excited about this. This has been one of the things about The Walking Dead I've been very legitimately excited about, is to see what the reaction is to the kingdom. Because as we saw tonight, it's a little larger than life. The show kind of does veer into like Game of Thrones territory for a minute. The kingdom doesn't feel, at least the way that Ezekiel puts himself out there and seems to kind of run his kingdom, wouldn't be far afield from like a little fiefdom in Westeros. Like, it feels like you could see that. I mean, certainly the way that Ezekiel speaks. So I've been very excited to see how that's going to translate for the show. And also, how is that going to translate for the audience? All of which is a long-winded way of deflecting the question and tossing it back to you, Rob, is I would really like to get your take on King Ezekiel. And did that character work for you tonight?
Yeah, I thought it was really
great.
I really enjoyed it. My only complaint was that, you know, we got a lot of setup tonight and nothing really happened in the kingdom. And I think that that's problematic a little bit for me as a viewer, because I know we're not going to go back to the kingdom easily for at least 2 weeks and probably three, if I had to guess. So now we had the setup of this cool world, but now we're just going to sort of leave it alone. And, you know, that's fine. But everything they did in terms of setting the story up here, I'm very interested to know what's going to happen ultimately in the kingdom. And, you know, I'm a Carol fan. I always like what they do with Morgan. So a lot of fun stuff tonight.
Well, I want to get back to Ezekiel, but what makes you so sure that we wouldn't go back to the kingdom in so long? Just the fact that stories are broken up pretty sparsely across the season right now, it seems like.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if we're going to get Rick next week. It looks like from the preview, there's a lot of Daryl. And I wonder Daryl if this is show. Going to be a Daryl and Negan and Dwight episode coming up next week.
That's one of the things that kind of stinks about The Walking Dead having such a huge cast. Like, lots of really great actors, lots of really fun characters, but it can be really hard to focus in on people. But I think that the thing with the kingdom that we saw this week that's very instructive is their circle intersects with the saviors. They are in the same world as Negan. Morgan recognizes those guys instantly. At least he recognizes their MO pretty fast. So that's out there really quickly, is that whatever arrangement the saviors have established with the Hilltop and Alexandria, it looks like they've established something similar with the kingdom here as well. So I think we're introducing this world so that that can get drawn into this network of communities that we're starting to see here a little bit. So I think that there's some hope that we will go back to the kingdom sooner than 3 weeks. 3 weeks seems like a lot. I would be pretty bummed about that.
I predict it'll be 21 days before we end up seeing the kingdom again. I think we will get a all Daryl episode next week in episode 3. And then I believe we will get an all Alexandria episode coming up in episode 4. And we may not end up getting any sort of intersection. You know, it's just one of the things about The Walking Dead, where on Game of Thrones, you check in pretty much with everybody every week for like 5 or 6 minutes. You know, a couple scenes with each character that you know, whereas The Walking Dead, you just get a standalone episode and then you don't see that person for a few weeks down the road. I mean, it's what my personal preference is. I'd rather do the check-in every week, but that's just not what this show does.
It's not this show. All right, so let's get back to Ezekiel here. I like Ezekiel a lot. I really liked Kari Payton's portrayal of Ezekiel. Ezekiel is one of those larger-than-life characters in the comics that when this storyline was created, just a little bit of inside baseball, I think that Ezekiel and the kingdom get introduced around, like, issue 109 or something like that of The Walking Dead.
108, Josh, from the story sync.
108, according to the story sync. I was off by one. That's not so bad.
Pretty good.
So it's introduced at a point where the show is already in production. The Walking Dead has been on the air for a little while. The Glenn death has already been illustrated and created in the comics of The Walking Dead, and Steven Yeun is already playing Glenn on the AMC show. So the time that Robert Kirkman and Charlie Adlard, the creators of the comic, are creating the Ezekiel and Kingdom storylines, the show is in full form, and it really feels like the introduction of a man who is speaking in, you know, sort of this Middle Ages, medieval Shakespearean dialect that also hangs around with a ferocious tiger. Just feels like the comic book's like smacking the show in the face and being like, I dare you to adapt me. Adapt me. Give me a shot. See if you can turn me into something that works on the show. And I think that they did a pretty good job. I think that the show did a pretty admirable job, especially with Shiva, which is a tiger that is now in the universe of The Walking Dead. And somehow Greg Nicotero and his team pulled that off with like animatronics and CG and stuff. And it looks pretty good. I thought that it looked really good. I thought that the kingdom really came alive in a really cool visual way.
Yeah, I'm definitely into it. And I know that the idea of the kingdom certainly is silly, but I did like that you got a backstory that sort of had it make sense. And I did like that scene with King Zeke and Carol at the end of the episode where he sort of explains what his background was. And I think that that was sort of all good to not have this be like a lingering thing for many weeks that or even seasons that we have to dwell on. What is this place? Why are they doing all this? So I like that you got that backstory all here in the first night. And now we can move on to more pressing issues and not just raise more questions that we have to answer down the road.
Well, I think it was really good to establish Ezekiel kind of, you know, not in his totality. There's other stuff to learn about this character for sure. But to find out that he is this king, he is this self-modeled king who rules over the kingdom here and seems really wise and everybody really respects him. But in comes Carol, who finds most things ridiculous, so of course finds this especially ridiculous, and is really laughing in a way that I think serves as an audience surrogate to a certain extent, to like finally, like to like very suddenly, jarringly have this guy Ezekiel talking the way that he's talking in the middle of your Walking Dead episode. It's jarring at the very least. And so for within that same episode, for it to end with Ezekiel showing a side of himself that's a lot more real, showing that he is just a dude. He's not a king. You know, he's in charge of these people, but he knows it's a myth and he's lending into the myth, and he can win Carol over with that, where Carol doesn't seem to think that he's that ridiculous by the end of the episode. I think cramming all of that into 1 hour so that the viewer can kind of get a sense of where Ezekiel is coming from is probably a really strong move in getting the audience to buy into that character. Because I think if they like stretch that out, and we don't find out that Ezekiel was a zookeeper once upon a time and is just a normal guy who was really into community theater and puts on a really good accent and can really improvise some Shakespearean dialogue. I think if you don't get that soon, if you don't find out that that's a, you know, a bit of a ruse, I think that that's a lot to ask to really hang into that character. So I thought that they did a really good job. Great performance. Good writing on that character. No complaints when it comes to Ezekiel.
Oh, I think we're also trained on The Walking Dead, too. Every time we meet charismatic leader of a new civilization, there's probably more than meets the eye. And usually it's in a nefarious way. And I feel like at least giving us that backstory on Ezekiel, I feel like that we are more on board with him and what's going on at the kingdom. And I feel like I have very little doubt in my mind that these guys are on the level. And these are people that are, should be allies of the Alexandrians.
Well, I think it would be fun to like go back and watch that episode thinking like, is there something nefarious here at the kingdom? Is Ezekiel up to no good? Is he trying to cause some mischief here? Like, I bet that that's a fun read of the episode. So I wouldn't discourage anyone from going back and looking and seeing if there's any tricks up that guy's sleeve. But at least as it's presented on the show, on the surface, dude seems to be on the level. You know, he seems like a pretty nice guy. Certainly cares about young Benjamin a whole lot. Yes. And feels really bad about what happened to old Benjamin, Benjamin Sr. So I don't know. Ezekiel seems like a good dude for now, but looks can be deceiving here on The Walking Dead. So who knows?
Who knows? For sure. But yes. Josh, I thought that this was such a great Carol showcase because once again, she is, you know, left to have to put on a mask, which we've seen her do certainly in Alexandria, where she goes back into this character of the innocent woman who's just so sweet. And she's doing basically that same exact Alexandria playbook where she's going around. She's stealing a knife. She's stealing clothes. And she's just getting ready to get the hell out of here and go back to whatever she was going to do before. And I really like that Ezekiel called her out on that and what she was doing. And don't BS a BSer. I like that really frank conversation that they had.
I loved that too. Don't BS a BSer. Hey, listen, again, Ezekiel was in community theater. He knows a thing or two about acting, Rob, so he can tell when Carol's being phony. He can tell when she's just creating a persona, a character. And he definitely sees through that in this episode. He sees through it pretty quickly. I think, like, especially when you like watch that first scene between Carol and Ezekiel, and you can tell that Carol is not buying this place at all pretty quickly. And when you kind of like reference that, when you go back and you check that with what we learn about Ezekiel by the end of the episode and the way that he's kind of just like looking at Carol and sort of being like, Carol, what do you think of this place? Like, you can tell that like he's even testing the BS there. So he kind of had her measure pretty early on, it seems like to me. And he really like even just like the way he just like kind of like slouches back on the couch and just like even like his accent kind of drops a little bit. He's just being like a normal guy. I thought that that scene was really good. And I think that it says a lot, I think, about sort of the theatrics behind a lot of the characters on The Walking Dead. Like, if you think back to like who these people were at the very beginning of the show, the people that like we still, you know, that are still from sort of like the season one, season two era, like Carol was not a Sarah Connor, was not an Ellen Ripley, was not this super badass who could go around and shoot up Terminus all by herself. She was, you know, a very scared, legitimately scared, abused housewife who was deeply afraid of her husband and very fearful for her daughter and had to really kind of create a character for herself in order to survive in this world. So I think that the Ezekiel story mirrors that in a really interesting way. But I think that you could apply that to a lot of the other stories, from like Rick having to become a hero and Daryl having to become a hero. So I kind of liked the idea of Ezekiel outwardly talking about like the self-mythologizing that has been happening here in the kingdom, of like turning himself into a larger than life figure, as we've sort of seen our main characters on The Walking Dead transform from season one to where they are now. And I think if you want to look at like the really dark and sinister version of the King Ezekiel story, maybe look no further than Negan. So I think that that could be kind of instructive of that character as well.
Yeah, I agree. And also in terms of the getting people to follow you, a lot of like 48 laws of power type stuff, right, and giving people something to believe in and some sort of legend that they can sort of buy into so that they feel safer and that they're more productive. So all interesting stuff in terms of the mythology of the kingdom. I want to sort of shift the conversation to talk about Morgan as well, because I thought this was an interesting showcase for Morgan as well tonight.
Did you like seeing his Aikido training back in full effect here? Did you like him training young Benjamin?
Yes, the master has taken a new Padawan.
Yes, there is a new young mouse nibbling at the cheese of the Aikido wheel is what's happening now here. Yes.
So
the cheese Morgan is in full effect.
So a couple of interesting things in terms of Morgan and Ezekiel. Do you think that Morgan and Ezekiel share a worldview? Do you think that they are kindred spirits, or do you think that Ezekiel fundamentally has a different view of the world than Morgan does?
No, I definitely got the sense that they're pretty simpatico. I really liked their dynamic. It was subtle, and I liked sort of following Morgan. I mean, not for nothing, Morgan killed a dude in the season six finale, and that's the first time he's killed somebody in a very, very long time. And crossing that line is an enormous deal for a guy who is starting to look at things in a very black and white way of, we do not have to kill. That does not have to be who we are anymore. When in the apocalypse, we've seen when you adopt a stance like that, typically you get killed. So Morgan, he pivoted in the season six finale in order to save Carol. And I think that you could really have seen the version of this story where Morgan goes wildly off the rails, where like now he has the taste of flesh again and he must kill and he can never be stopped. But instead, I think that like you probably have a guy there who is not feeling great about what he's just done, but is seeing that there are reasons where sometimes you do have to cross certain lines in order to protect the people that you care about. And I think that a lot of his decision making and a lot of his worldview was reinforced by Ezekiel. Like, think back to the scene where Ezekiel summons Morgan, summons young Benjamin, brings them out on a run where they're going to hand off the swine, the pigs, to the saviors, and things go poorly. Poor Sir Richard is getting free punches to the face. It's not great. And eventually those guys ride off, and Morgan like had his gun out at one point. It seemed really heated. And Morgan says, "Is this why you brought me here? Because you know that I've killed the saviors before and I'd be willing to do it again." And without really skipping a beat, Ezekiel says, "No, quite the opposite, in fact." And I feel like that's a real affirmation of Morgan's worldview. To me, I read that as, no, I brought you here because you've got a pretty cool head. And you know that a life is precious, and to take a life means something really, really astronomical. And you're not going to do it unless it really, truly needs to be done. So I read that as Ezekiel really values Morgan, which is a great spot for Morgan to find like somebody in one of these communities that actually isn't like looking at him like he has 100 heads just because he respects life. So I liked that. I loved that dynamic. I think this is a great spot for Morgan.
Right, if I'm Morgan, I'm in no hurry to get back to Alexandria. No. Yeah.
They've got cobblers here. They've got pomegranates. You know, who needs wheat and sorghum and rye?
Yeah.
When you've got edible arrangements here in the kingdom.
That's right.
I thought there was an interesting conversation then about
edible arrangements.
Yeah. That Morgan worldview where he was talking with Benjamin about it, where Benjamin was asking him about, so I noticed that you don't eat meat. Does this mean that you never kill? You're talking about the everything from Aikido. And Morgan says that I thought I had it, but now I'm just fumbling through. Sometimes we change our minds. What does that mean to you in terms of how Morgan is looking at the world?
I think that it's referencing what I said before. To me, it strikes me that Morgan, like I'm fumbling through, like I thought that I had this, you know, this very figured out, really well thought out, rigid worldview of you can't kill. Life is precious. All life is precious. Everything has to be done to preserve life. And we can all get along if we really, really try. And I think that that was a really extreme worldview that Morgan had to adopt in order to break himself away from the Morgan that we saw back in Clear in season 3, who was a real Looney Tune, that guy. So he really had to put in a lot of work to get there. And I think that over the course of season 6, a lot of the journey, and certainly you and I were talking a lot about, like, what's the purpose of Morgan here now that he's on the show? What's he going to find? And we were wondering, like, is he going to find some sort of middle ground? And I think that now we're finally getting there. I think that now that he has killed somebody, probably didn't love it, but really likes Carol, considers Carol one of the top two or three people he's ever knocked out, which is... I believe the company there that we have seen is Rick, the Wolf, and Carol.
Right.
So if Carol is in third place in that lineup, that's kind of offensive considering the Wolf is pushed past her. So I hope that she's at least top two. But I think that Morgan at this point has realized that there are times where you have to break away from that code, where the world isn't so simple, that there are shades of gray here. And in the zombie apocalypse, maybe it's great if you're not shooting everything that moves. That would be lovely if you could actually try and forge bonds and work together and live together. But I was taking that as Morgan now understands that there are some people that cannot be bargained with. There are some situations that are non-negotiable, and it's either me or them, or it's either my people or their people. And I think maybe he is now inching closer to realizing that sometimes you have to take some drastic measures that aren't so palatable. So I think it's a little bit of a step towards transformation for Morgan if he's not already fully there.
And just a reminder, we're going to get to your questions in a little bit. Send those in via Twitter, hashtag PS recap, so we can get to those later on in the show. Josh, when Morgan goes to look for Carol and sees that she is gone, I thought his reaction was also curious. He seems like he's smiling, and it's almost like the end of Good Will Hunting good. Like, I knew one day you'd get out of this place. Good job there, Carol.
And isn't it really lame that they deleted the scene where Morgan hugs Carol and keeps saying over and over again, Carol, it's not your fault. It's not your fault, Carol.
It's BS.
It's very sad. It's very, yes. Very sad. Yeah.
So why do you think that Morgan seems so happy that she left?
I think that, you know, there's this line earlier in the episode where Carol says to Morgan, you know, this is my path. It's not your choice. Like, I'm, you know, this was never your choice to come. You know, this was never your decision to make. I was leaving. It was not up to you to bring me back. And I think that that kind of falls in line with Morgan's shifting worldview of like, it can't always be my way. I can't always track somebody down and bring them back in because that's how I see things need to be. Sometimes people have to be on their own journey the way that I was with Eastman and everything like that. So I get the sense that he's, you know, maybe if not quite relieved that like he doesn't have to deal with Carol anymore, then I think at the very least, sort of like, if not quite in awe, at least respecting the fact that like she really is committed to wanting to do what she wants to do. And I think Morgan is starting to realize like, it's not my place to tell Carol what to do. Nobody tells Carol what to do. Carol does whatever she wants.
So Carol ultimately gets set up at the end of the episode in a house. Is that in the kingdom sort of zone, Josh?
It's a borough, or it's borough. Like an outer borough, like the
Brooklyn of the kingdom. The kingdom.
Yes, the kings of the kingdom. I think, you know, when in the start of the episode, you know, when the convoy carrying Carol toward the kingdom comes under attack and she breaks away while she's like having all like these sort of like gold trippy visions of walkers turning into humans and vice versa, which I have no idea what's going on there. We could talk about that if you'd like. Sure. She sees a house, and you know, she sees a walker in there, and that's the same house that she's at the end of the episode. So I think, you know, when Ezekiel is talking to Carol and trying to convince her not to leave and trying to convince her to stay, he says like, maybe you can stay and you can go. Maybe there's a way you can do both. And I think that this is the happy medium that he's talking about, where like, she's not living in the kingdom proper, but she's like, I don't know, she's like it's like kooky old Carol used to live in the kingdom. Now she lives in the abandoned house up the street. Like, I think that, you know, she's not that far away. Like, I think that she's pretty close by. So it's kind of a happy medium there.
Yeah, the idea of Carol seeing all of these people being slaughtered and seeing them as in their human form. I mean, do you think that Carol has like what Lizzie used to have, where she's looking at these walkers as like real people now?
Oh my God, please no. You know, I hope not. I mean, who's going to The Grove Carol in that state? You know, like, is Morgan going to have to The Grove Carol? That would not be so the well. I think that would be terrible. I don't know. I think that to me, it's like one of those sort of wonky Walking Dead visual flourish things that they like to do every now and then, where they're trying to drive a metaphor home. And like the thing with Carol is like, what's the point? The dead, the living, we're all the same. We're all here. We're all doomed. It's very fatalistic. And that's kind of Carol's worldview at that point in the episode. And I think that she's looking at things through slightly rosier tinted lens by the end of the hour. If not fully rosy, then at least rosy-ish.
Rosita.
Yeah.
What kind of place was it where Carol was set up? It seemed like it was a house, but it had like tombstones.
Yeah.
Like a graveyard house.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a haunted house. It seems like a great place for Carol. It seems like great timing with Halloween happening. You know, I love that. I'm into it.
Very spooky house that Carol picked out to live in.
Well, she's kind of a spooky lady. You know, she likes to tell stories about cookie monsters and, you know, tying people up to trees and letting walkers eat them. So maybe that really fits.
Like, I know it's the zombie apocalypse, but do you need a house that's actually in a graveyard?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Like really pouring it on.
You know, maybe it's really smart. They'll never suspect that I'm staying in the graveyard where all the dead bodies are. No one's going to look here. That might be good camouflage for Carol, who's always looking for the next thing to camouflage.
So Ezekiel comes to Carol's house at the end of the episode, bearing pomegranates. Yeah. What does he want?
I don't know. He really wants Carol to try some of these pomegranates, though. It's like, it's so sweet. The fruit's so good. Yeah, it's like a little bitter getting there, but once you sink your teeth in, it's really tasty. He's like kind of creeping on pushing the pomegranates, like the hard sell on the pomegranates is what's going on.
You're not thinking that we're getting a Walking Dead man here, do you?
Oh, no.
We got to replace the Maggie and Glenn, and the new another couple is going to be Ezekiel and Carol.
A new manse? Are we in for another manse?
Another manse.
Wouldn't that be so sad for poor Tobin back in Alexandria? Like, Tobin and Carol were in the cuddle shack not so long ago, and then she left, and poor Tobin, like, what did he do? He's a nice guy. That would be sad. Wouldn't it be sad? Or are you shipping Carol and Ezekiel? You like that more?
I think that's more of a badass couple, Ezekiel.
Z Carol, I mean, that writes itself, so that's pretty good.
That's pretty good, right?
You know, you never really had a good one with Carol and Tobin. Tobin Douche.
Tobin.
I don't know. I don't know if that's very good. I like a Z Carol. That's good. Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems like, I mean, he's paying her a house call like 5 seconds after she leaves the kingdom. That seems like something's pointing north.
Yeah, I think Ezekiel might be more of a hunky guy than Tobin, with all due respect to Tobin.
Hey, you know, it's a lot of the coat, I think, for Ezekiel. You take the coat off, maybe he's, you know, like a thinner frame than Tobin.
Does Tobin have a tiger?
I don't know. Tobin doesn't have a tiger. Tobin is a tiger. Heart of the lion, that guy. Oh, my gosh. Give him a hug.
Now, we have some of these lieutenants that we met in terms of Ezekiel's crew. You gotta feel like that there's going to ultimately be something going on with what was the guy's name that got into the fight with Negan's
crew? Sir Richard, I believe.
Sir Richard.
I'm just adding the sir on there. I'm trying to be respectful. I believe his name was Richard.
Yeah.
I got Richard and Benjamin, and then those are the, I think there was a Diane in there I caught. And of course, Jerry, how could we leave Jerry out? Jerry's the man Deuces.
Richard, I called him Kingdom Douche in my notes.
Kingdom Douche. Oh, he seems like a good guy, right? I mean, like he's stepping up for the, you know, he's protecting the reputation of the peeps.
Well, you know what's going to happen. The next time we do one of these drops, then he's going to ultimately really get into it with this long hair guy again. Right. And it's going to only escalate. And then we're going to have Negan showing up at the kingdom. And you got to feel like that's on the way, right?
That feels like a pretty good bet. I think like the biggest tell on that is that the cast of The Walking Dead is way too massive to sustain Richard for any length of time.
You know, like, yeah, I think he would be like the most expendable person.
Yeah, he's currently the most it's a toss up. Him or young Benjamin, either one of those guys right now. I think those are the most expendable people on the show at the moment.
Young Benjamin really could have used some lessons, because they hand him a machete and they tell him to kill one of the walkers.
Right?
It's not even close to what you're supposed to be doing with the machete with the walker.
No, that was bad. That was really, really pathetic to last this long at young Benjamin's age and not even be able to figure that out. It was tragic. Not saying that I would do any better, but I would not be around at this point.
It was rough. Apocalypse.
Young Benjamin, you really got to figure that out.
Josh, anything else from tonight's show before we dive into some of these questions?
I'm trying to think if there's anything really. No, I mean, it was a quiet hour. It was, you know, not a huge amount of plot momentum. It's really establishing a new set piece for the world of The Walking Dead, you know, a place that's going to interact with Negan and the Saviors and Rick and Alexandria and all of that. This is, you know, it's on the show now. It's not here for no reason. It's part of the chessboard. And I think it's going to be cool to see how that shakes out, because it's sort of murky. It's sort of hard to see what the full picture is and how this gets woven into the fabric. But personally speaking, as somebody who didn't love like the premiere and like felt really bummed out by it, I really did like the lighter episode of Walking Dead this week. And I think that it did show that Walking Dead has that Walking Dead's real strength to me when they're really getting it right is character, because the actors are really good and the characters can really, really pop. So I liked a good Carol character study episode. I thought was great. Carol being one of the great characters of this show. Melissa McBride doing incredible stuff with that character over the course of the years, and especially with season six, you know, kind of taking Carol on a ride that a lot of people didn't love. I think really kind of derailing the Carol character and story just a tiny bit. At the very least, we were not so thrilled if you go back and check the tape on that. And I think that they started setting her back on the right path in this episode. So I think an effective episode of Walking Dead, a simple episode of Walking Dead. I'm pretty happy with episode two of season seven.
Yeah, a little bit reminiscent for me. If you go back to that, this would be really nerdy. Star Trek Next Generation season four, after the Battle of Wolf 359, very quiet episode of Picard goes to visit his brother on Earth. It's very, it's just a chance to catch your breath. But I was fine. I'm ready to go. It was a long off season. I don't need a breather already this
well, I don't,
early.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to have much of a breather. I think it's like a quick week of just like, hey, that was really, really intense in the premiere. Take a moment, have some cobbler, have a pomegranate. How do you like these apples? Yeah. So there's a little bit of that going on. And then I think we're going to hop back into it pretty quickly here. The preview for next week looks like it's going to be a pretty serious, depths of despair type of episode, which is why we watch Walking Dead, Rob.
I caught the first couple of minutes of The Talking Dead tonight, Josh, and Chris Hardwick was like, oh my God, oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God nobody died tonight. Oh,
I saw that too.
No. Oh, please. Oh, thank goodness. Oh, this was.
I liked Kari Payton, who came on, the actor who plays Ezekiel. And I like that he just like busted out a big British accent because like the running joke is that everybody who's on the Walking Dead is secretly from the UK. And then he revealed quickly that, no, he's an American.
That's funny. That's funny.
I thought that was good. That was funny.
All right. So we're going to dive into your questions, of course. Walking Dead feedback coming up later on this week. Josh and Alex Kidwell did a great job with the week one feedback. You can get your questions into the show by emailing us, twd@postshowrecaps.com, or by going to postshowrecaps.com/voicemail to leave us a audio message. We always like to get those on the feedback show. And of course, you could subscribe to make sure you get that at postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Maybe it might be a pomegranate in it for you if you leave us a honest review.
Yo, is that true? Like, if I left an honest review of our own podcast, would you give me a pomegranate?
Yes. Yes, I would.
I'm into it. I'm feeling it. Yes. I'm down to this. Yes. All right. Sounds good. All right. Shall we get into the feedback?
Let's go, Rob, into it. Let's get
Sir
into
Robert.
It.
Sir Robert. All right, this is from Derek Blaze leading us off here. How long will Morgan and Carol stick around the kingdom? Will Carol and Morgan ever fully see eye to eye? Rob, what do you think? How long are we going to have Morgan and Carol here in the kingdom storyline?
Well, Josh, we haven't done a death pool here in season 7 of The Walking Dead. But for me, Morgan is pretty high on my list of characters that are not going to make it to season 8.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I was saying that a lot throughout season 6. It's like, I just don't see the world where Lenny James has decided, like, I'm going to be on The Walking Dead for the next 100 years of my life. Like, he does not. He seems like more of a Ronin, that actor. Like, he's the guy who likes to wander around across the land, offering his amazing acting services to the next person who needs it. So I've been waiting for that shoe to drop. And I think especially if now we're seeing Morgan find some peace, pass off the Eastman training book to new young Benjamin. Like, could we be seeing a handoff here? And if we're also talking about, like, who are impactful characters to lose along the way here throughout season 7, if things start to get really rough. Yeah, I would put Morgan higher on my draft board. I could see it.
Yeah, Carol's got to go back to Alexandria. Morgan.
You'd probably think so. I mean, well, one of the things is, and maybe this will come up in the feedback, is, they don't know what happened. You know, they have no idea what Rick and everybody just ran into, which is at least partly Carol's fault for leaving and everybody like getting worked up and trying to find her. And like, certainly that's what Daryl did. Like, he broke out and he was trying to find Carol and he got caught and now he's with the Saviors. So if Carol catches wind of that information, does she go back to Alexandria or does Carol try to bust out Daryl? You know, the one person that she really has a connection with. So that's something that I'm keeping an eye on as well.
Okay, let's go to Cabin Douche is back. I think it's safe to say that Lucille has probably paid a visit to the kingdom. If so, flashback incoming. Do you think that we are seeing kingdom flashbacks of Negan? I think that we're probably just going to get present day Negan. I don't think we need to see a flashback of Negan cracking some skulls in the kingdom. Do you?
No, I think that that's like the last thing we need. That feels like that would be a really regressive move. I think we're pretty caught up with what the political situation is between the kingdom and the Saviors. Clearly, it does seem like that's a move that Negan likes to make. Negan likes to introduce Lucille to new people in his circle. I would expect that at this point, Negan has done that in the kingdom. He probably gave somebody the Abraham treatment. So I think that we've probably got all we need on that front. I don't know that we need like the 90-minute Tabitha the pig flashback. Like, I think that we're okay. I think we're good on that front.
Yeah,
we'll be okay.
Okay. This is Miriam White. What does she have to say?
Miriam White says, Ezekiel and Carol, a new hope romance. Will Shiva get jealous? Hashtag Queen Carol. Well, now I really do like this pairing of Ezekiel and Carol for the idea that she could become a literal queen. That feels good.
Yeah.
Like the idea of Carol becoming the Carol Lisi.
Yeah. Is Carol or is Shiva possessive?
I don't know. I mean, Shiva, like, according to Ezekiel, you know, the whole story is like Shiva got trapped. She hurt herself. Ezekiel saved her. She really likes Ezekiel now. Then the apocalypse happened and Shiva went with Ezekiel and really still really likes Ezekiel and maybe doesn't like other people so much. So, yeah, I would expect that could get awkward. That could get awkward pretty fast.
Could get awkward.
You know who I really do like is the Mr. Smithers of Ezekiel.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Jerry, yeah. Deuces.
Yeah, that guy's the best.
Jerry, hype man. Or is it Gary? I'm not sure. Jerry Gergich over here. Yeah, no, that was great. Really great character, especially really funny when Ezekiel is like, "Oh, Jerry, I don't understand your words. The things that you say, they just fly over my head like sparrows in the eve." And Jerry's just like, "Whatever, dude." You know, he's just got like a lot of Hurleyisms to this guy. I like him. I like Jerry. I hope Jerry's around for the long haul.
Okay. Fat Tyson Apostle wants to know, is medieval the best era for Ezekiel to choose to run his kingdom? Wouldn't ancient Rome be so much cooler?
Ooh, that's a good question. What would be the best era for Ezekiel to run his kingdom in then? Do you agree? Is ancient Rome better than the Middle Ages? Is that cooler? I mean, boy, I don't know. Like, is there an expectation of like...
togas are going to get pretty dirty after a while, no?
No, yeah. I don't think that would be a great look. Look, I think the kingdom is all right. What do you think about the armor that they've got for the knights of the kingdom, though? It seems like they could give them an upgrade.
Yeah, it seems like what are they wearing? Like catcher's equipment?
Yeah, you know, they're living in a high school here. Like, they've repurposed the high school to be this community and everything. So they're working with, like, whatever's in the athletic shed, I guess. But these guys have been on runs before. They didn't find a single thing that's just, like, a little sturdier than, you know, an umpire's uniform. And, like, how many umpires, like, catcher guards do they have at this school? Like, they really, like, this was a school that really specialized in catchers. They had, like, a ton.
So I think that... probably would be fun to see like a flashback to like the first day that you ended up seeing Ezekiel, like telling people like, all right, see that catcher's equipment, put that on. Let's go with this. Let's just tell people like you're a knight.
Yeah.
And I'm the king.
Uh-huh.
And we'll just go with this. I've got a tiger. What does it hurt?
We'll just go with that. We'll just give that a shot.
Give it a shot. Run with it.
Speaking of tiger, this is from Jay Riot Maker, who says, Ezekiel has a freaking tiger. How did Negan get Ezekiel to do what he wants? Give me an explanation. Fanfic this out for me, Rob. Negan rolls up to the kingdom, does his Negan spiel. You're going to give me halfsies, and then I get to let you live. But unfortunately, I'm going to have to kill one of you guys first to make an example of you. And what? Ezekiel and his tiger are just totally cool with this. How did this play out, Rob? How did this go?
Yeah. Negan shows up with like 25 guys with guns, and they're pointing the guns at you like, okay, you're going to give us half of the stuff. I mean, they shoot the tiger before he rips Negan's head off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they certainly couldn't have Lucille'd Shiva. That feels like that would take way too much work. That she's not going to stay put for that. You don't want to hit a tiger with a barbed wire.
They have a lot of guns.
Those two. Yeah.
That's really a good way to get people to do things.
I'm not quite sure what like the rock, paper, scissors of the Walking Dead universe is, but like if you've got Lucille and Shiva and an unidentified third
rocket launcher.
Like, yeah, rocket launcher. I think Shiva eats baseball bat. I think that's taken care of already. Rocket launcher really kills both. I don't really know what baseball bat works against, just your head.
I think it can break the rocket launcher.
Okay. That's what it's going to work.
Yeah, if you get it in close distance.
All right, that's good.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, we'll field your suggestions if you guys have any.
Okay.
That third spot is open. All right, this is Derek Blaze. Derek Blaze says, rank these leaders on who you would trust most with the safety of your group. Rick, Negan, Ezekiel, the governor, or Rob Sester? No.
Okay.
All right, Rob, last place.
Okay.
That's pretty easy. No, I think the governor has to go last place because he shot all of his people.
Thank you, very much.
Yeah, Rob hasn't shot me yet.
Josh, we have to pay the bill.
We've got to pay the bill. So then I guess it's a question of Rick, Negan, and Ezekiel. How would you rank those three?
Look, Negan's the best. Then Ezekiel's the second best. I'm the third best. Rick is the fourth best.
Wow.
And then the governor is the worst.
Phil.
Because here's why. Here's why, Josh.
Poor
when
Phillip.
Negan comes and says, give me half your crap or I'm going to start killing people, I'll say, here you go, Negan. Negan, can we get anything else for you, sir? You need anything else, Negan? And Negan's like, hey, Rob, your shoe's untied. Whoop. And then
he makes you look, and then as you're looking down at the ground, he bashes you in the head with a baseball bat.
He doesn't need to make an example out of anybody. Okay. Rick's getting people killed. Yeah, I'm just giving Negan everything.
Yeah, but didn't Negan get like an entire bunker filled of his own people killed? Technically, I mean, Rick killed all those guys.
Yeah, but then he got revenge.
He did get revenge, but he, He only got two of us. So, I mean, I guess that really speaks to like the grandeur of the Saviors. Like, they really got to have a lot if that was just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. All right. We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll see. A couple more questions. Byron wants to know, Morgan doesn't want to tell Ezekiel about his Star Wars kid training regimen.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, God, I love the Star Wars kid training montages here on The Walking Dead. It's really great. What if that's young Benjamin? Tonight. Is that young Benjamin's origin story that he's Star Wars kid?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Ben Kenobi.
Young Ben Kenobi.
Full circle, Josh.
Indeed.
There you go.
Full circle indeed. All right, Derek is back. Derek says, so should we call this offering the fray of pigs or simply more of Bob's tainted meat? What's your take on this, Rob?
I like fray of pigs.
The fray of pigs. Yeah, I like that. I like the pigs. Like, I don't really know. I'm still confused about the whole feeding them to the dead thing. I'm sure we'll get some clarity.
I mean,
on that,
was it just a resource management issue of like, hey, don't waste all of the grain or the sorghum
or the wheat?
Yeah, that don't feed the pigs anything that we could eat. Feed them walkers, then fatten them up. Or is this like some sort of like biological warfare? This is some sort of Trojan horse that's going to infect,
Trojan pig.
Yeah,
yeah.
Infect the Saviors and give them the zombie virus.
TBD on that. That feels like a turn. That would be a turn for the weird for The Walking Dead.
Because
here,
if it's just a resource management issue, it's a little bit like, why are we doing this? Why do I have a storyline about like, oh, we're trying to save grain, so we're feeding them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just like their own like little, you know, covert FU to the Saviors of like, you guys are getting all these pigs, but our pigs are eating like, you know, crappy cadavers that have been rotting forever. And so your pig like is definitely going to be protein and meat, but it's going to, you know, taste horrible. It's going to have the taste of death really, really seeped into its flesh.
So Negan's going to show up giving us some pigs that don't taste so good.
Yeah, they don't taste great. I'm used to that Black Forest ham.
Yeah.
I want some of that honey ham.
This
and you've got me.
Bacon tastes like jackrabbit.
Turkey bacon.
Who's
and you know how I
the
feel about
today.
That. Who's getting the bat? Batter up. Yeah. So I think that's what we're looking at.
All right.
Here comes Alex Kidwell, the man. Am I alone in having a new favorite character in Big Smiley Asian Bodyguard? Hashtag fruit.
No,
nine.
We're all on board. We love that guy.
Jerry, Team Jerry. I'm all in on Jerry.
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 Jerry. Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry.
Yeah, we're feeling it. Who could use of the cast of The Walking Dead? Who could most use a trip to Jerry's couch to really like talk it through with Jerry
And get hit on the head with a chair?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like who's the bodyguard? And is Jerry both moderator and bodyguard? He's got the type for it, the body type.
Yeah, boy,
he's really working hard on his show.
Yeah, as long as we don't get like Maggie on like Maury Povich or any sort of paternity question
No, stop that.
Stop.
That's really cruel. Stop. That's cruel. It's still way too soon.
And Josh, do you know how to fix an air conditioner leak?
No, that would be useful because our air conditioner in my apartment leaks frequently.
Have you checked the refrigerant?
No, I haven't. And now I've learned something. So I'm glad I didn't quit The Walking Dead after last week.
Okay,
I hung in one last time.
Last question.
Sure.
From Derek. How many episodes until we catch up with Jesus again at the hilltop? Boy.
The world
Season
really...
Eight?
Yeah. Listen, this world of The Walking Dead right now needs some Jesus. I think it'd be good to get back to the hilltop. I mean, the hilltop story, it's kind of, it feels like an afterthought because there's so much immediacy with some of these other storylines. But it is worth remembering that, like, Rick only made his move against the Saviors and Negan and everybody on the intel from George Mason at the hilltop, from Gregory. How is that going to play out? Like, is Negan going to put that together? Is Rick going to like go back and have questions about, hey, you're, you know, telling us that they had like one bunker of people. You were so wrong and you got my best friend killed. And this other guy with sweet red hair is also dead. So I feel like whenever we do get back to the hilltop, like it feels like that has potential to be contentious. So looking forward to that.
All right.
That'll be fun whenever we get there.
So we'll see. Coming up next, we've got our Walking Dead feedback show. We'll get to that midweek. So make sure you get your questions in twd@postshowrecaps.com or postshowrecaps.com/voicemail. Josh, you writing anything about this episode?
I will be writing a little bit of a thing that's kind of supposing where maybe Ezekiel and Carol's dynamic is moving forward based on some information that we have from the comic books. A lot of guesswork that's going to be going on here.
Ezekiel,
yes. So we'll see. We'll see where that's going. So I'll have something on that probably on Monday afternoon on The Hollywood Reporter. So look out for that.
Okay. All right.
Lots of nonsense writing about The Walking Dead from me this season. That's what you can look forward to.
All right. You can follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. I'm at Rob Cicerino. Got a lot of fun stuff going on with The Walking Dead. So make sure you subscribe to postshowrecaps.com/TWD iTunes. Josh, what's going on Westworld?
Dude, I don't know.
Any tigers on that show?
No tigers yet, but the tigers would be robots if they existed on Westworld. No, Westworld heating up. 5 episodes in. Really fantastic show. Killer show. I'll have a podcast. What's that?
There's 10?
There's 10. Yeah, there's 10 total in the Game of Thrones tradition. There's going to be 10 episodes. So we're halfway through season 1 of Westworld right now. We'll have that podcast up with Joe Garfine by Monday night. We will record midday on Monday. If you're watching Westworld, if you want to get your questions, your theories, your anything into us, westworld@postshowrecaps.com is our email, and our feedback form works as well, postshowrecaps.com/feedback. Loving that show. Big fan of Westworld. Westworld's
everybody's
very, very
loving
fun.
It.
It's a good show. Really good. Really entertaining. And makes you think, Rob. Makes you think.
It's a thinker.
Some things, it's a thinker. Okay. Does some things to your noggin. What do we have for a hashtag here?
You want to go Ezekiel?
That's easy. Let's do that.
Let's do that. Okay.
Ezekiel.
All right. Like fun it. Stuff. Thanks so much to Alex Kidwell behind the scenes. He's at Alex Kidwell on Twitter, and he's a great guy. So thank you for
swell dude.
You,
swell
all
dude.
Your help tonight. And again, great job on the feedback show. And Josh, you feeling any better about Walking Dead season 7 after tonight?
Look, and I said it on the feedback shows, like there's still things that I'm optimistic about with season 7. Just because I didn't like the premiere doesn't mean like I'm not willing to give Walking Dead a shot here. And I liked this episode a lot more than I liked the premiere. So I'm interested in the potential of the season. I'm here. I'll be here on Sunday nights with you, Rob, and I'll be here on Wednesdays or whatever day we're recording these feedback shows as well. I'm with you. I'm still here. I'm still hanging in.
All right.
Doing okay.
Fun stuff. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll see you on the feedback show. Take care, everybody. Bye.